Welcome to the Court Report. I am Jerry Price, and I am here with Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Banghart. And coach, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
So it's Wednesday. It's not Tuesday. So we said we're going to do it every Tuesday, and then last week was Thursday. This week is Wednesday. So we're going to say every week.
That's
but I'm
fair.
Also, I think because the schedule's getting back to normal, I think Tuesdays are going to be our day.
Yeah, maybe. Tuesdays are our off day, so I still use that day as a recruiting day a lot.
So we're going to go with every week.
Okay, Wednesdays are probably even better, but yeah.
Wednesdays might be better.
Yeah.
Okay, so we could say Wednesdays. Yeah. Starting now, Wednesdays.
Okay.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah.
This week is game week. You haven't had a game week in a million years. What I wanted to do was count up the number of Division I games that have been played since your team played, and I never did that, but it's a lot.
Oh, a lot.
What's it been like?
Oh,
and would it have been any different if you'd won the last game as opposed to lost the last game?
Probably a little bit. I think we've got, there's a sense of urgency that comes from
which
being
is good,
behind.
I think.
Yeah,
so, like,
much.
If you won the first game, you're like, oh yeah, we're fine.
Yeah. There could be that reality for sure. Luckily, film doesn't lie, and we know how poorly we played, and that would have been a key message going into the break. But you're right; it's hard to avoid the result. Either way, positive or negative. So it's been good. You try to get healthy in this period. You cheer up your offensive and defensive package. You continue to build skill development in the younger guys. So it's always a good month. It doesn't mean you always come out strong, but it means it's a good month.
So I mean, you've had plenty of time to watch every other team in the country play, and I'm sure that you have a lot of friends who are coaches. I'm sure you've talked to some of them about this. This is nothing that they can relate to because this is the busiest time for conferences. Is January and February, and you've played one league game.
Yeah,
teams have played 12 league games already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say it's. I get this a lot. I can't imagine what's harder, having a month without games or to play two games back to back every conference game. And my answer is always the same. It's all we know here. So to our athletes, there's nothing to compare it to. So this for them is college basketball.
So I have an idea for when the academic calendar changes, not
Good.
Next year, but
I'm
the
in.
Year after. It's going to change the league schedule. And what I would do is I would have each team play, a two-game conference weekend, three of those in a row. Then everybody plays their travel partner. Then three more weekends. So you play your travel partner on a weekend, so that would be one weekend, we only have one game instead of two. Then three more weekends. And then the last weekend before the tournament, you only have one game each. You play your travel partner the last game of the year. And that way, at least you're a little more rested before the tournament. Those games become bigger. There's presumably your biggest rival is your travel partner. I like that idea.
Yeah, I have to say, I actually presented a very similar proposal to the Ivy League office. I know they're going through a pretty robust scheduling opportunity in terms of the Princeton's exam schedule gives us a lot of options now with time. And I agree, instead breaking up the back-to-back, there's been every idea, the idea of splitting some so you don't have to do some back-to-backs. But my main thing is competitive equity matters. And you only have seven other teams in your league. And so if I'm playing Cornell a single game, but I'm playing Brown and Harvard or Brown and Yale in back-to-back games, now your competitive equity isn't real, right? So I think the back-to-back is either for everybody all the time, or you're playing single games all the time, and then you got to make it over 16 weeks. So I presented the same thing, 3 weeks, and then either an off week or your travel partner, and then 3 weeks. And actually, if you move the tournament up a weekend, which I know there's some speculation that we shouldn't do that because it would affect TV rights and whatnot, but it means your seeding would be accurate because the seeding is done before the tournament result. So what happened last year is they sort of averaged out our seed and Penn's seed, and that's why we got so late. I got a 12, when really we should have been a 10 and they should have been a 14. That's why we got a 12. So for me, where I stand, I care about the seed. Most of the other league is caring a lot more about at that weekend. There's nothing else going on, so it's a great weekend for TV.
But I think that the scheduling is a big issue moving forward, and it's a big opportunity for the league. I've always wondered about the Friday, Saturday. I mean, hockey, even if you think about playing two hockey games back-to-back, is not easy. But I get it because of travel expense for staying an extra night. If you played, suppose you played Friday night and then Sunday afternoon or Sunday at noon, it's expense of being in a hotel another night. And then it's also the idea of, I think a lot of it is dictated by academics. So you want to have all of Sunday to refresh and to study and get ready for classes on Monday. But I think that if you played Friday night, Sunday, it'd be healthier, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think, I've always worried about the long bus rides home in the middle of the night, you know, coming back from Harvard to Penn or from Cornell to Yale or Princeton to anywhere, and or, you know, or back to Princeton, you're on these buses until the middle of the night, and, you know, thankfully nothing's happened. But I've always worried about that.
Yeah, the Friday, the issue with the Friday Sunday is they, as a former student athlete in the Ivy League, is, yeah, you'd like to have a full day off. I mean, to have the Sunday, it's very rare in college basketball if you can have that Sunday where you don't have class or practice. So I think actually I would imagine, and we have polled in my million years in this league, most every student athlete would prefer Friday, Saturday as opposed to, you know, having Sunday. I don't really fall in love with the expense comment, and I know that's crazy, especially on air. But
well, I'm an administrator.
$13.6 billion endowment, and we're going to talk about hotel rooms. I mean, but yeah, I understand it's important. It's reality in life, but you know, your time is money in this world, and I think having that Sunday is more valuable than what it would cost.
But I also think that money notwithstanding, or, you know, obviously money has to drive decision making, that notwithstanding, I think there is a charm to the Friday, Saturday. I've always liked that part of it.
And for families. So imagine if, like my family, they're from New Hampshire, when I was a student athlete, if you're going to come for a weekend, you get two games. Friday, Sunday is hard for families to take that much time off, because now you can fly home on Sunday morning instead of, you might not be able to get a flight that Sunday night. So yeah, it's good.
I've always looked at it from the point of view of there's a ton of games on Saturday. There's not a ton of games on Friday.
Oh yeah, the refereeing would be better on Sunday, for sure.
I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking exposure. Where there aren't as many games on Sundays and there's aren't as many games on Fridays, so you almost have like the spotlight to yourself if you did it that way. But
you're
again,
right.
Like these are decisions coming down the pike. There's one more year of the academic calendar not changing, so presumably you'll have another year where it's like this. So a couple of questions. One is, you know, the men played Wesley, a Division III game. They usually play a Division III game out of exams.
Mm-hmm.
You choose not to do that, so now you're going into the first game back. Without having played any kind of tune-up. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, we've lost two of the last 3 years coming out of this break. So, you know, not to say that I have the right answer, but I do know that when we recruit with the idea that we're going to give you the best of both worlds academically and athletically. And I don't, especially in the women's game where there's a very large difference in terms of talent and size across division, I find no value in playing someone who, even if you don't play well, you're going to beat. It's not a game I want to give up. It's one less game that they get to play against a Division I team, and I'm not willing to give up competitive opportunities against good teams.
So you and the other part of the exam break is, I mean, it's to me there's always been a certain, you know, it's unique to Princeton where everything stops. It's basketball, hockey, track, squash, everything stops. And, you know, people recharge a bit. I feel like your players have a chance to recharge mentally from the first half grind to what's coming next. I get moving the exams to before the holidays and all that, but, you know, I'll miss a little bit of the uniqueness of what Princeton has done here.
Mm.
Do you agree at all? Or?
Yeah, you know, I would say I would always ask the student athletes kind of what works for them. You know, I think it's because we're here anyway, it's nice to be playing games. You know, I know the university is going to have some flexibility in January what kids want to do because the academic class schedule is still not going to be that advanced in terms of classes will probably still start in early February, I think. And so, you know, their peers will be able to do these probably 3-week courses somewhere or travel, but athletes can't do that. So
your group makes up for it in the summer.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, we already have. I think we've got a freshman going to South Africa or Kenya, and we've got a sophomore going to Greece. I mean, we're already starting to figure out where they're going this summer. It's fun.
So let's talk, actually. Let's actually get back to your team playing games.
Good. Let's do it.
So I assume you have looked around the Ivy League as much as I have, and you see what you see is Columbia. So anyway, this weekend it's at Columbia, at Cornell, 4 o'clock Friday, 5 o'clock Saturday, doubleheaders with the men. And we can start there. I mean, you know, you and I are both fans of the doubleheaders.
But I'm a fan of the doubleheader because I think it does alleviate the athletic departments and consolidates your marketing opportunities and all for all those good reasons, right? I get it. But out of respect for the guys, let's make sure we understand. I only support the back-to-back if we're the first game. You know, I don't want
to. Which would make you unique, I think, on women's coaches.
To play the second game, so let's say, so for the men, they're going to play.
They're 7 and 7:30.
Right. And
but
so
it's 7:30.
At 7 o'clock, last year they played Cornell at, I think it was 8 o'clock tip,
right,
at Cornell.
It says 7:30, but it's not going to be 7:30.
Right. And so let's say you play at 8, and then you've got a 4.5-hour drive up there. to play another game less than 24 hours later. Like, every minute matters. And so for me, I'd want to be the first game. And
I feel like women's coaches wouldn't agree with you because they don't want the women's game to be perceived as the, you know.
No, I think based on the Ivy tournament discussion, I think they do. I think women want to be first in part because, you know, if you have more fans come to the second half while they're waiting for the men's game, as opposed to you get there early to watch the second half of the men's game, and then some of the fans leave for your game, and so the gym looks different. So based on how we've done it for the Ivy tournament, I think we always want to be before the men if possible.
I love the doubleheaders.
I bet.
You get to see both games. You get to see both teams. So let's talk specifically about Columbia and Cornell.
Yeah.
The challenge is that they bring, they split their games. Each team won on their own. Each team won at home.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably they're, you know, tough in their buildings.
Yep.
What do you see?
You know, I think it's always a hard road trip because of the distance between the two schools. So you're part of that.
You never know if you should, like, you know, if you're doing it in reverse, if you were going to Cornell first, you never know if you should go straight to Columbia or come back here
right.
and then go to Columbia the next
yeah,
day.
And so if you have 24 hours between games and four of them or five of them are on the bus, I mean, it's hard, right? So that's the first, the biggest challenge for us is it's the first game out of the break. So how we approach, how we sort of get the cobwebs out quickly, that's always the biggest challenge. Secondly,
and how do you do that?
You know,
or how will you know if you're not doing that? Like, will you have like a feeling immediately of, yeah, we're fine, or are you going to have a feeling immediately of this, here we go again? Or?
You know, I think it's that last year when we came out and played Yale, obviously we beat them pretty handily the second two times. So it was that cobweb thing. Part of it.
Well, one thing about that game is Yale did make 12 first half three-pointers.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. Your son was calling the game, I remember. You know, I think it comes down to that nobody cares about your reality but you, right? So in the first game is Columbia, there's none of their student-athletes are looking at it and saying, oh, I just feel so bad they haven't had a game in a month, right? And so we just have to stay focused on us and our journey and, you know, we be that way, what it may be.
And then, of course, you're coaching against your former assistant.
Yes, former. And the only other former Ivy League student-athlete in the league, which we both have a great sense of pride for the league in that way. And so in a way, it's like the people who, with, of course, the whole league is really values the student athlete experience, but Meg and I having walked it, I know that's always a special thing for me, is that one of my own and a former student athlete representing the league now, it makes me proud.
What about the specifics of how Columbia plays and the specifics of how Cornell plays?
Columbia is a little bit like us in that they're so young, so you're playing with house money, right? I mean, technically, with what we've gone through in terms of our experience, guys being injured, we've never really had more than like three upperclassmen in a uniform all year. That's kind of how they are, you know. So it's, you got these young guys that, you know, sometimes that helps because they don't have any knowledge of anything else but just go out there. So they're going to be young and energetic and excited to kind of play with house money. And then you've got Cornell has got much more. I think she's one of the best coaches in our league in terms of X's and O's. So she runs a lot of great action. So we'll have to be really sharp in terms of understanding how we want to defend various actions on the floor.
And so, what about the league as a whole? You know, Harvard is the only 2-0 team. Mm-hmm. Penn is 1-0. Everybody else has at least one mm-hmm. loss. Penn has the win over Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
Harvard swept Dartmouth, your alma mater, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you noticed they shut Dartmouth out in the first quarter of that.
Seven at half, and then it.
But then Dartmouth
then
had
they
27
got
in the third quarter.
Yeah,
and
crazy.
Dartmouth made it a game.
I think they're, I think our league is top to bottom stronger than it's been. You know, I think it's who we presume to be in the top four are can beat anybody, each other any given night. And then even 5-6 can get in there a little bit. So it should be a fun journey.
And speaking of journeys, it's not, you know, you think of a journey as something that's going to take a while. This is not going to take a while. This is
good point.
13 Ivy League games in, 37 days. And after having no games in 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's very odd. And, you know, I wish we were healthier so that we could sustain. Usually we've been really good here because we've got great depth. And I still think we have great depth. We're just, we need to get the depth healthy. So, you know, I'll have to manage practices and such so that we're able to be fresh when we need to be.
So a couple other things before we go that are not women's basketball related. Let's talk about Sean Gleason, the offensive coordinator from Princeton, who left to go to the same position at Oklahoma State. That's a jump from the Ivy League to the mm-hmm. Power 5 Big 12. Oklahoma State won the Liberty Bowl this past year. I don't know how well you know Sean. Mm. Really good guy.
Yeah, really good guy. And paid his, you know, and certainly He's a great example of he was impactful every step and job he had here, right? And so it was no surprise to anybody that he'd have other opportunities because it wasn't so much about title, it was about being good in the role he was in. And one of those roles was he was a dad. You know, I remember I saw him the day before Christmas at the bookstore over at Barnes & Noble, the two of us, and we both had a kid on our shoulders. And his wife was about ready to pop for her having their second child. And, you know, here we are, two coaches, me in season, him just finished an undefeated season, and all we talked about was how much we like being a parent, you know. So he's just a really good guy, has earned it, and has made Princeton proud, and he'll keep doing so.
Yeah, I'm happy to, you know, happy for him moving on. It's, you know, Bob Cerace's first two offensive coordinators. The first was James Perry, became the head coach at Bryant, now the head coach at Brown, his alma mater. Now Sean goes off to Oklahoma State, and I think it says something about Princeton and Princeton athletics and Princeton football that Oklahoma State would take a chance on there.
For sure. You're either – I just think you're also, as a coach, I think Bob's an example of this, you're either developing leaders or you're building your own brand, right? And he's developing leaders, both his players and his staff, and it's never about Bob, and that's why they're so good.
Lastly, there's a certain game on Sunday with your New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Rams. Super Bowl, whatever it is, 53,
Super
I think?
Bowl, I don't know. We've won a lot of them, so it's exciting.
So, all right, well, I can't in my mind imagine a way the Patriots will lose this game.
Don't say that, Jerry.
I can't. It's
gross.
Such
my
a
first
lock.
Year here, the Giants beat us in the Super
it's
Bowl. No one would have thought they would win.
It's such a mortal lock for the Patriots.
Please. They're well coached. They've got a really good quarterback. They're young. I don't want to hear it. Until the final scoreboard, I'd like to see.
You got a prediction?
Well, I was wondering if I should wear, I have a bunch of, as you can imagine, Patriots jerseys. Like, is it inappropriate? What if I wear a suit jacket over it? If I
what,
wear them this
during
weekend?
During the game to coach?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Friday and Saturday.
You should
games.
Definitely do that.
So I was just thinking, you know, if you wear with a suit jacket, everything looks nice, right? And dress pants. So I think that's one potential option is that I wear a Patriots jersey. But anyway, predictions, I have to admit, the last football game I watched, the only football game all year I watched from start to finish was the last one. My dad is like a diehard, so he keeps me in the loop. And he is a little bit nervous for this game. So therefore I am. But as a coach, I got to say, it's really hard to be the guy that everybody's hunting all the time. And so it'll be fun to see how they respond. And our quarterback's older than me, and he's unbelievable.
It's interesting to me that he is, you know, he's 41, and he's still doing it at that level. And maybe he doesn't move exactly the way he moved before. And one thing you don't see him do as much of is quarterback sneaks.
Yeah. Which I know those quick.
He was the best ever at that.
Ever. I mean, I tripped up the stairs like 2 days ago, and I swear I have like bruises. He gets hit by giant men and keeps playing. It's, yeah.
So at some point he's not going to be able to keep doing that, but he said he's definitely back next year, and Gronkowski isn't sure.
Yeah.
But
would you if you were Gronkowski? You just get hit
by
giant
thing,
men.
Like, those guys love to play that game so much that they're going to play every minute that they can and until somebody tells them they can't.
If I was Gronk, I'd be like, I'm so tired of you guys taking
I'm
out
so
my legs.
I'm so rich also.
Yeah, and I'm so rich.
And
I
like, my life is
my
great.
Legs
I,
hurt.
Have, I have the most fun of any human being on the planet.
Exactly. It's time
and
to
they
do something
keep going
different.
Back out there for,
yeah.
You know.
I'll be surprised if Gronk comes back. Now, of course, I don't know him at all, but I just, watching him get hit hurts me. So.
And Brady, I mean, he just said he'll keep playing, but my take on it is at some point, it's going to happen quickly for Brady. Like, he's either going to pull his hamstring and never come back from something like that.
Gosh, I'm like knocking on wood. That's so
mean.
Or
you're just going to lose it. You know, just at some point, you just can't keep doing it at the level that he does it at. So my point to you is you better enjoy this one.
Oh, okay.
Also, if you think, you know, the Chiefs with that quarterback.
Yeah.
Figure to,
oh, nice. He's good. So. Yeah, that's the game needs stars. So Brady leaving would be, I think, bad for all football. I know a lot of people don't like him, but
it's not just you need stars. You need somebody that you can love and you can hate.
Yeah.
So no,
you can't hate Tom Brady.
Everybody hates Tom Brady.
Why?
Who doesn't for the Patriots?
He's handsome. He's so
successful.
That's
why they hate him. He's married to a supermodel.
And I know.
Wins all
he's
the
so
time.
Great.
That's why people
from
hate
the
him.
From the North. Yeah. Come on. He was a backup
arrogant.
Quarterback in college.
You know who he is?
College?
He's Michael Jordan. And
how do you hate Michael Jordan? Like, who are these, like, Grinches in the world?
The difference between him and Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan's a little more likable, came across as more likable, but they're that same kind of competitor. And, you know, I think it's a good comparison of those two. And there's a lot of people root against Michael Jordan, too, because
everyone hates the winner. I'd rather be the winner than be worried about being liked.
Anyway, the Patriots are going to win that game somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 14.
I hope you're right, but I do think you said the same thing out of the break. You're like, you were watching after last year against Yale. You came right over and you said, you got this one. So just keep telling me I'm going to lose and then I'll prove you wrong.
All right. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the Super Bowl. And we'll also see what happens as the Princeton women actually get to play two games this weekend. So Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock at Columbia, turnaround 25 hours later, 5 o'clock in Ithaca to play Cornell.
Outfit TBD.
And we will, outfit is TBD, might be one of those New England Patriots jerseys with a number 12 on it, I presume.
We'll see.
And then we'll be back next week, presumably Wednesday, we'll say?
Yeah.
Okay, so back on Wednesdays from now on for the rest of the year. And thank you for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Jerry.
So for Courtney Banghart, I'm Jerry Price. Thanking you for being with us this week on The Court Report. Good luck to the Tigers, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton women's basketball.